Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. And the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. After all, stories bring us together. Our first story is an old tale called Wicked John and the Devil. Now, who are you going to root for in a story with a title like that? The story is about a guy so tricky he could trick the devil himself. But he tricks plenty of other folks, too. Now, in a lot of stories about people who win against big odds using nothing but their wits, the trickster plays his trick, beats the bad guy, and hooray, end of story. But for me, the story of Wicked John and the Devil goes a little further. It asks the question, what kind of life is there for a guy who makes a life out of tricking folks? Donna Washington is the terrific storyteller, all set to bring you this story. Here she is, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
Now, Wicked John was a blacksmith. His name was actually just John, but people called him Wicked John because he was mean. He was one of the meanest people you ever wanted to meet. He had a bad attitude every moment of his life. He had a lovely rocking chair in his forge, and when people came to get a job of work done, they wanted to sit in that rocking chair. He didn't like people sitting in his rocking chair. If you sat in his rocking chair, he'd push you right out of it. Don't sit in my rocking chair. I don't care what you want. Just don't sit in that. Okay, John. The ladies of the garden club loved the beautiful flowers that grew on this gorgeous bush right outside his front door. He did not like them picking his flowers. So they had a little ruse. One of them would bring him something to fix, and when he went in to fix it, the rest of the garden ladies would be watching behind the bushes. And then they'd come running out, pick as many flowers as they could. They didn't care if they were wilted or what, just get and then run off. He'd come back with the fixed pot, and there would be some bare spots on his bushes. Y'all leave my bushes alone! But they were already gone. The children in the town liked to play with his 10-pound hammer. It was great for busting rocks or playing this game they made up called bat ball. He hated that. He'd look around, his hammer would be gone. He'd run out the back, y'all cheering, give me back my hammer! And they'd laugh at him, and they were fast, and he was not fast. They'd run around, finally they'd just drop it and run off. You're the worst children in the world! He hated it. He didn't get along with anybody. Now, I don't know if you know this term called Southern hospitality. It means that even if you don't like your friends and your neighbors, you will treat a stranger very well. So one night, he's about to sit down for some supper, and it's raining buckets out there, and he hears pump, pump, a little feeble tapping on his door, and he opens his door, and outside is the oldest-looking man you ever saw in your life. He looks like if the wind blew too hard, he would just blow away. And John said, oh, you poor old man, come on inside the house. Okay. And John brought him inside and put him in his rocking chair, put a big old blanket in his lap, and gave him his own supper. He said, now you sit here, old man, and when you're done, I'm going to put you in my nice soft bed. And he turned around and clap! There was a clap of thunder, flash of lightning. And when he turned back around, there was St. Peter standing there. He had a book, because, you know, St. Peter always has a book. He had the keys to heaven on his belt, and he was holding up a torch. He said, congratulations, John. John said, who are you? He said, I'm St. Peter. I don't care who you are. You came in here under false pretenses. You're not an old man. You a young thing. Get out of my house. No. I don't care what you're here for. Get out. I don't want to get out. I'm supposed to give you 3 wishes. I don't want 3 wishes. I want you to get out of my house. He says, no, you don't understand. I've been walking the earth trying to find people to do good deeds for if they do good deeds for me. And you just did a good... I don't care what I did. I didn't mean it. Get out. Well, St. Peter promised he would not leave until John made his wishes. So John said, fine. He looked around. You see my rocking chair right here? I wish if anyone sit in it, it'd rock them and rock them and rock them and bang their heads up against the back till I say, let him go. That's your first wish? Yes. Okay. My second wish is if anyone try to pick my flowers, that the bush reach out and grab them and suck them into the deepest part of the bush and poke them and poke them and poke them and poke them till I say, let him go. That's your second. That's my second wish. Okay. What's your third wish? My third wish is anyone pick up my 10-pound hammer, it just sling them around and around and around till I say, let him go. Okay. Now, will you please get out of here? I made my wishes. And a clap of thunder and a flash of lightning, St. Peter was gone. And John said, well, I'll be. Maybe that was St. Peter. And then he looked at his rocking chair. And he looked at his hammer. And he looked towards his door where that bush was and went, well, the next day, a person came in for a job of work, handed John some horseshoes, and said, John, would you fix these? He said, no problem. Why don't you sit in my rocking chair? And the man said, are you sure? I'm positive. You just sit yourself right down and get comfortable. Well, he sat in the rocking chair, and he started rocking, and the rocking just go faster and faster and faster. Bang, 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 bang. Ah, John! Yes? Will you stop this chair? I don't know if I should. Oh, please. Don't you want to sit in it? No, 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 no. And what does John say? You remember what he says? Let him go. The rocking chair threw that man across the room. Boom. The man grabbed his horseshoes and took off. It's a small town. Word got around. Nobody else sat in that rocking chair. The ladies at the garden club came the next day. One of the women had a pot that she had clearly taken a nail and punctured a hole in it. And she said, can you fix my pot? Yes, ma'am, I sure can. And you ladies of the garden club, I know you want my blossoms. Don't you worry yourselves none. You pick the best ones. He went inside to fix the pot. Well, sir, they normally had to grab and run, but today they got to pick. So they were looking for the prettiest blossoms, and it just turns out that two ladies reached out and grabbed blossoms at the same time. That bush sucked them right on in, started poking them. They started screaming. John was in there. Tung, 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 tung. Something wrong out there. He was having himself a good time fixing that pot. Listen, those ladies holler. One of them came in. John, there's a problem. I don't think there's a problem. I'm just fixing a pot. No, there's a problem outside. I don't think it's a problem. Eventually, he came out. Those two ladies was all in the middle of that bush. He said, y'all gonna touch my flowers again? He said, they said, no, 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 no. So what did he say? Bush spit him out. John went back inside, and now he just had one more thing to wait for. A 10-year-old, one of the bravest of the boys in town, came a-creeping into the forge. He said, you don't need to creep. I'll give you my hammer. Here you go. Child said, thank you, John. He said, no problem. Child ran outside. They were waiting at a great big old rock. Soon as he lifted that hammer up, it started flinging him all around the courtyard, every which way, hitting him upside the building, just hitting him and throwing him around. He was going, ah! John was laughing so hard. He said, you go touch that hammer again. No, no. All the children were saying, no, no. And he said, what does he say? No. Ah, the hammer went one way. The child went the other. Nobody messed with his stuff after that. Now, it just so happened that the devil was doing some paperwork. And he realized that there was a man on earth who did not need to be there because he was just so mean. He was busy doing his paperwork, so he called his youngest son. He said, you need to go up there and bring me Wicked John. And his son said, okay, Daddy. So the littlest devil went up and knocked on the door because he was a very polite little devil. Pum, pum, pum. And John opened the door, and there was a little devil standing there.
Hi.
Well, how? What you doing here?
My daddy says you got to come with me because you mean.
Well, I'm busy.
That's okay. I will wait for you.
He's all right. Well, have a seat. He set him in the rocking chair. Little devil, his little feet dangling. He was rocking and rocking and rocking. Ah! And John said, you okay?
No, 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 I'm not okay.
Well, I tell you what. You just sit there till I'm finished.
I don't want to sit here till you're finished. Let me go.
I'll let you go if you promise never to come back.
I promise.
What does he say? The rocking chair threw that little devil up against the wall. Little devil ran out, went to see his daddy. Daddy, he really mean. Well, the devil said, what happened? He told him, he said, that's wrong. He sent his teenage son up to get him. Now, he was 15. You know how 15-year-olds are. He also knocked on the door because he was also polite. Pom, pom, pom. John opened the door, and there was a 15-year-old devil standing there looking at him. You disrespected my little brother. You got to come with me, John. John said, well, I'm busy. I can't go to my last reward with my work not done up here. So come on in and sit. I'm not sitting in that chair. All right, then at least let me finish my work. All right, but I'm going to keep my eye on you. All right. John picked up his 10-pound hammer, and he started hammering really slow. Tung. Tung. Go faster. I'm going as fast as I can. Tung. Give me that hammer.
That medium-sized devil threw his hand back
And that hammer started swinging him all over that shop. John, just watch him. You okay? Let me go. I don't know if I should. Finally, he said, I'll let you go if you promise them to come up here again. I promise, I promise, I promise. What does he say?
Let go.
Shh. He threw him one way, and the hammer went the other way. That teenage devil got up and ran out of there. Well, the devil came to hear that both of his children had been disrespected. He went straight up there. Now, they were polite, but he was not. He broke the door in. John! John said, oh, my. Excuse me. Maybe you and I, we need to... Oh, we're not going to talk. You coming with me? I don't care what you're doing. You don't get to have a last request. You're coming with me. And he grabbed John, and he started dragging him out of there. And John said, well, at least when, even though I'm in a terrible place, I'll be able to think of these beautiful flowers, and it will bring me joy. The devil dropped him by the front door and said, you don't get to have any joy. I'm going to pull all these flowers off this bush. And he grabbed the first one. And the bush pulled him right on in, started poking him, poking him, poking him. And of course, the devil can't be screaming like other people. No, he just took it for a little while. And after a little while, he'd stop. And he said, excuse me, John? Yeah? Will you let me out? Maybe. Please? If you promise not to bother me no more, I'll never bother you again, I promise. What does he say?
Let it go.
The devil got up and ran off. He didn't say anything. He didn't look back. It's like when a cat falls and pretends they did it on purpose. Well, time went on, and John got to be 95 years old, and death came to visit him. And John said, well, I don't know if I'm ready yet. Death said, we don't get to choose our time, John. You just come with me. And John said, all right, why don't you have a seat while I collect myself? And Death sat in his rocking chair. And it rocked him and rocked him and rocked him and rocked him until John said,
let go.
Death was dizzy. His head hurt. John said, oh, my goodness, let me get you a glass of water. Hold my hammer while I go do that. Death picked up that hammer, flung him all over the shop until John said very quietly,
let go.
Death hit the wall. You know what? When I'm feeling dizzy and discombobulated, those flowers always help me out. Why don't you pick one and give it a nice big sniff? Death grabbed one of those flowers. Bush poked him. Finally, Death promised he would never come back and visit him. And so John said,
let go.
And Death wandered off and never came back. John was 185 years old, and everything he had hurt. And he decided it was time to just call it quits. But Death would not come get him, so he had to take care of himself. He wandered himself up to heaven, and as he got closer, one of the little angels saw him and said, oh my goodness, close the gates! Bang, they closed the gates. Little angels peeking out at him. Oh my goodness, what's he doing up here? Oh my goodness, oh my goodness. John said, hi. Do you mind if I come in and look around? You cannot come in here. No, 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 no. He said, well, go get St. Peter. He and I are close personal friends. So St. Peter came up. He said, John, what are you doing here? He said, I thought you might let me come in and take a little look around. He said, well, I know the rules. You can't come in. He said, well, you didn't look at me. Look in the book. Look in the book. So he opened the book. John had 6 good deeds in there. And then it said, for bad deeds, see Appendix 35. John did not get in. St. Peter said, I'm sorry, you have to go the other direction. John said, well, I figured, but I just wanted to come say hi. And he went on down the other way. As he got closer to the gates where the devil lived, one of the little devils saw him and said, oh, no, close the gates! Bang, and they shut the gates. Well, John got up there. Little devil's looking at him. Ooh, it's him, it's him. I told you about him. He put me in a rocking chair. You remember I told you about that? That's him. Well, John said, how come you not letting me in there? They said, we not letting you in. You scary. Someone said, go get daddy. And the devil came and said, John, what are you doing here? He said, well, I can't go up there. So I want to come. You cannot come in here. You do not belong in here. You are dangerous. John said, where am I supposed to go? He said, I know what to do. And he got a lantern and he put some green fire in it and closed it up and handed it through the gates to John. He said, you take this and you go find your own place. And John took that green fire and went out into the swamps. When you see a will-o'-the-wisp, it's not marsh grass in the mud. It's not evil spirits, nothing like that. It's Wicked John and his lantern, causing as much trouble now as he ever did. And that is the story of Wicked John and the devil.
Donna Washington with a story called Wicked John and the Devil. Now, you may have seen all kinds of things in that story, things that are all your own and that maybe no one else saw when they listened to the story. That's part of the magic of stories, and that, of course, is the treasure you can share with the people that you love when you talk about the story you heard. I mentioned that for me, the story asks the question, what kind of life is there for a guy who makes a life out of tricking folks? And if that's the question, it seems the answer has something to do with Wicked John being left with no place, really, where people will have him, neither in heaven nor in hell, doomed to a kind of in-between life, wandering as a will-o'-the-wisp. The truth is, while I love stories about tricksters, this story made me think twice about any ideas I might have about making too much of a practice of tricking people in real life. Now, the story brought back a funny memory for me, kind of a trickster memory. One autumn night, when I was in about sixth grade, my little brother and I told our folks we were going to sleep over at Eric Murdoch's house. And Eric Murdoch told his folks that he was going to sleep over at our house. And the truth is, we weren't going to sleep at either place. We were really going to meet halfway between our two houses with rolls and rolls of toilet paper stuffed into our big coats. And then we were going to wait until it got really late, and we were going to pick someone's house, and we were going to get toilet paper it good. We were going to throw rolls of toilet paper up into their trees, wrap toilet paper around their cars, and string toilet paper all through their bushes and around their mailbox. I mean, it's what people did for good, tricky fun in those days, especially kids our age. Well, we met, and late at night, just about toilet papering time, we still couldn't agree on anyone's house to hit. So we decided to toilet paper the city park. We strung toilet paper around the slides and swing sets. We threw toilet paper up into the big pine tree. We got balls of toilet paper wet in the drinking fountain and threw them against the phone booth. Problem was, Officer Seitzinger, one of only a couple of police officers in our little town, drove by on Main Street and saw us doing our mischief. And we were all escorted home, feeling just about as guilty as we'd ever felt. And although it was the middle of the night, my dad got out of bed, put on his bathrobe, and met Officer Seitzinger at the front door to take delivery of his two guilty boys. And he sat us down in the living room, and he didn't know what to say. When he did open his mouth, he told us about nice old Mr. Devi, who lived about four houses down from us, and who was the guy who worked for the city, who would have to clean up all that toilet paper. And the long and the short of it is that we went down just a few hours later, at dawn, to help Mr. Devi do it. Tricks have their consequences, we learned, and sometimes those consequences fall on good, innocent folks like Mr. Devi. Well, that's where the story took me. Where did it take you, and who will you take along? It's a pleasure to be with you on this episode of The Appleseed, and our next story is from Bill Lepp, a story with a character in it named Cuss. If you had to choose between having the name Wicked John and the name Cuss, I wonder what you'd choose. In any case, Cuss in this story is a little like Wicked John in the last story, and this is a funny tale about Cuss's funeral. Here's Bill Lepp on The Appleseed.
Early in my life, just after getting married, I was a United Methodist pastor for 4 years. And I served a charge of churches, which was three churches. Every Sunday morning, they were in a 10-mile radius of my front driveway, the only driveway. And so I would, right beside the house, I preached at 9 o'clock. And then about 3 miles away, I preached at 10 o'clock. And then about 3 miles from that, I preached at 11 o'clock. So I was always in a hurry at the first two churches. The third church was just 12 old ladies. And I always told them that they got the dance mix of the sermon, because by then, it had been perfected. But in the first of those churches, we had a guy named Cuss Runner. Now, Cuss was a good old boy from Long Tall Mountain Stock. He'd been a member of everything. He'd been a miner. He'd been a union man. He'd been a strike breaker. He'd been a Republican. He'd been a Democrat. He'd been a Kiwanian. He'd been a Rotarian. He'd been a Girl Scout. He'd been a Boy Scout. He said that he always joined the side that looked like it was going to throw the first punch because Cuss Runner loved to fight. Now, as an occupation, because there wasn't a lot of money in that, as an occupation, Cuss was a moonshiner. And my understanding was that in about 8 counties, he was just a renowned moonshiner. And the story goes that one night Cuss was in a bar and he got in a bar fight. And a guy pulled a 6-shot revolver and held it in Cuss's face. And Cuss said, I didn't know what to do. So I just hauled off and I punched him as hard as I could. And when I punched him, he threw that arm up in the air. He pulled the trigger and shot a hole through the ceiling. So I punched him 5 more times. That was problem solving to Cuss Runner. Now, I didn't meet Cuss for about 6 months that I'd been in that town. But his wife, Helen, was in church anytime the doors were open. I don't know if you know this sort of couple. One of them is always in church. The other is never in church. Helen was there. Sunday morning services, if we were having a Wednesday night Bible study or a Sunday evening choir sing, a cover dish dinner, if we were cleaning the church in the spring, Helen was there. Now, I'd been there about 6 months when I got a call from Helen, and she said, Preacher, Cuss is in the hospital. Can you go visit him? Now, she didn't ask me to save him, because we're Methodists, and that's none of our business. And so I said I'd be happy to go see Cuss, and I drove over to the hospital. I took one step in the hospital room. This was the first time we'd ever met, but it was a small town, so we each knew who the other person was. And the first thing Cuss Runner ever said to me was, I ain't never had no time for preachers. And even though I knew I shouldn't, I immediately went on the defensive. And I said, why? And he said, because preachers always feel like they have to have the last word. And I said, well, that's kind of our job. And then I took a physical step back, and Cuss took sort of a mental step back. And he said, listen, I'm 88 years old. I've had my liver and my pancreas transplanted. I've had quadruple bypass surgery on my heart. I have 2 artificial hips, an artificial knee, and I've lost 3 toes to diabetes. He said, I'm still spry as a fawn, but the doctors have done all they can do for my body. I think it's time I started working on my soul. And after that, if the doors were open, Cuss was there in the church. On Sunday mornings, he would come into my office and sit down at my desk while I was going over my sermon, not writing my sermon. I wrote those on Saturday night. And so Cuss would sit there while I was going over my sermon. Very often, he would proceed to tell me off-color jokes, which he had often illustrated on 3x5 index cards. Now, none of those illustrations ever made it into my sermon, but they were good exegetical background. And it was interesting because for 88 years, Cuss had been causing problems in this community. It was a very small community. We only had 2 streets in Half Dollar. One was called Main Street. The other one was called, nah, that ain't Main Street. So people knew each other for generations back. And so people had a hard time believing that Cuss was actually trying to take these steps to become a better person. There's a lot of doubt about his motives, but I saw him out in the community. He was righting a lot of wrongs, and Cuss was never going to be able to explain to you the nature of how Christ was both 100% human and 100% divine at the same time, or the nature of the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, or how sin works. He was never going to be able to explain that, but I thought that was great. That was fine, because Cuss was trying to go to heaven, not Harvard. And so, you know, I did what I could for him. And then I got moved to a different church about 90 minutes away. And I'd been up there about 6 months when I got a call from Helen. And she said, Preacher, Cuss up and died. Finally. He said he wanted you to come down and do his funeral because he couldn't stand that new preacher. And the fact of the matter was nobody could stand the new preacher. Now, in our little community, a pastor can get away with a lot of flaws. Maybe they're not that great of a preacher on Sunday morning. Maybe they turn in paperwork late. Maybe they don't show up to meetings. But if you go out and do visitation, if you see the people that are homebound, the people that can't get out, the people that are in the hospital, they'll forgive you for a lot of other things. This guy wouldn't even let Cuss tell him off-color jokes on Sunday morning. So who would like him? So I said to Helen, yes, I would be glad to do Cuss's funeral. And that is true. You can ask just about any pastor. They would tell you they'd much rather do a funeral than a wedding. Because at the funeral, nobody's going to complain. And so I got down there to do the service, and it's not a big church. I mean, it's a tiny little country church. It was packed full, standing room only, windows were open. People were cutting holes in the ceiling and lowering people down just to people had come from other states because they just wanted to know what could the preacher possibly say at Cuss Runner's funeral. And I didn't know either, you know. I didn't know which direction Cuss was going. That was the big topic of discussion. And so I stuck with those sort of middle-of-the-road texts, you know, the verses that say things like, my father's house has many rooms. If you ask for forgiveness, you will be forgiven. Even those who show up late get the same wage as those who worked all day. And then I said to the congregation, I said, you know, we don't get to judge. I think a lot of times there's someone, probably in every congregation, that feels like they are actually God's person in that congregation who gets to say who's going where. I said that's not actually our role. Jesus does that. I said that my father, who had been a pastor for more than 20 years, he said that when you get to heaven, in his theory, there were two reasons why people cry when they get to heaven. And the first reason is God opens up your checkbook, or probably now your banking app, and shows you exactly how much money you could have given to the poor and the needy. And the other reason Dad says that people cry is because they get there and there's some people that aren't there who they thought would be there. I think there's a third reason some people cry, and that's because they get there and there are people there who they didn't think would be there. So I said, it's not our job to say who gets to go to heaven and who doesn't get to go to heaven. And then we wrapped the service up, and as we were leaving to go to the graveyard, I think that the dominant emotion was hope. Hope that Cuss would go to heaven. But I think that it was a selfish hope. I know it was on my part. It was a selfish hope because I knew that in the great class of salvation, that Cuss was the kind of guy that, you know, if he could keep the bell curve curving, the rest of us had a pretty good chance of getting in, right? Like, so we hoped Cuss would make it. It just opened the door. And we got to the graveyard and we, you know, the VFW was there and the disabled American veterans were there and the French Foreign Legion was there. And there was 177 rounds of ammunition fired. And then Helen had about 17 triangular folded American flags on her lap. And then it was my turn and I went over and I commended Cuss's body to the ground and I said the Lord's Prayer. And there was one more event. We went over to sort of a clearing in the graveyard and there was a guy there in a rumpled suit with a cage. And in that cage, there were three white doves. And he opened the cage and the three doves flew out. And he said, now these doves symbolize the presence of the Holy Trinity here with us today, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And as he was saying that, those three doves were flying a big circle around the graveyard. And then two of the doves started to come back down, and the third one was flying off that way. And the guy said, now two of the doves will return, and the third dove is going to fly off toward the horizon, and that will symbolize Cuss's soul as it makes its final journey to its final resting place, where his sins will be forgiven and his body will be healed. And just as that dove crossed the wood line, a great big red-tailed hawk rose up out of the woods, snatched Cuss's soul, and descended. And everybody turned to look at me. like I might know what to say. Now, I went to divinity school at Duke University, but they never once covered hawk soul snatching. And so I opened my mouth. I was just gonna start talking. I was just gonna start saying anything till I hit on something reasonable. When I remembered the very first thing the cuss runner ever said to me, and that was, I ain't never had no time for preachers, because preachers always feel like they have to have the last word. And I thought about that, and I thought about the Pentecost, where the disciples are standing around, and all of a sudden the Holy Spirit descends, and now all of the disciples can speak every language in the whole world so that they can take the word of Christ to every corner of the earth. It's also my favorite verse in the Bible. You know we're not drunk. It's only noon. But at the Pentecost, the disciples, they get every language so they can go out and tell everyone about Jesus. And we celebrate that, and it's great. But I think the one language we always forget that we got at Pentecost was the language of silence. And sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes the absolute best thing we can say is nothing. So I just shut my mouth. And I looked at Helen, Cuss's widow. She was standing there beside me. Her head was down. Her shoulders were going like this. And she looked up at me, and there were tears just flowing through all the wrinkles on her face. And she had a huge smile. And she said, well, in that great, hearty mountain woman way, she said, well, I ain't never seen nothing like that before. And then she said, there's plenty of food up at the house. Let's go put some coffee on.
Bill Lepp with the story of a funeral for Cuss. Now, that story was just for fun, mostly. But the thing that strikes me about it is the humane way that Pastor Bill Lepp treats Cuss, takes him seriously, and he doesn't jump to the conclusions about Cuss that a lot of people in town do. I imagine that if Pastor Bill were asked to officiate over the funeral of Wicked John, it'd be the same way, no matter how Wicked John might have been or treated people. Have you ever played a trick on someone? Have you ever come out on top with just your wits? Has anyone ever played a trick on you? Did you ever know anyone that seemed tough to like, but once you got to know them, you got to treat them, well, you know, like a human being? I bet there are some stories there. Thanks to Donna Washington and Bill Lepp. You've listened to their stories. Now it's your turn to share some of your own.
The Appleseed is produced by Wendy Folsom,
Sam Payne,
and Brian Tanner.
Our audio engineers are Ashton Parkinson
and Carly Wilson.
The rest of the Appleseed team is Kelly Wehrmeister,
Trent Horton,
Evadine Hendricks,
Miriam Isay,
and Tristan Schetzel.
A special thanks to the subscribers of our podcast who rate us or leave reviews.
You help people find the show.
We also love to receive emails at theappleseed@byu.edu.
Your thoughts and comments help us to shape the future of the Appleseed.
We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family.
And you can find episodes of The Appleseed wherever podcasts are found, on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org/appleseed.
I'm Sam Payne, and the whole team can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.